The date is December 15th, 2000, and we're watching Dude, Where's My Car? Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and try to look past that gosh darn nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Jesse to my Chester.
Hello, I am Colin Stewart.
So this week, we're looking back at December 2000, when the movies in theaters were The Sixth Day, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Unbreakable, The Emperor's New Groove, I love that one, and of course, our movie for today, Dude, Where's My Car?, which earned $73.2 million on a $13 million budget. Not bad. Not bad.
Wow. I am shocked. That is... Wow. Wow, that's the most shocking thing I've heard today. $73 million. I thought you were going to tell me this movie made like $13 million.
Yeah,
and it was made on a budget of like $1 million or $500,000. That's wow. I mean. Wow, that's impressive.
I mean, those are $2,000, so I mean, that's not like, we're not talking 80s $13 million, so that's still a pretty low-budget movie for 2000, I'd say. Like, The Grinch would have had a much, and The Sixth Day, which is an Arnold Schwarzenegger, those would have both had much higher budgets than this one.
Yeah, I guess the budget is one thing. I am just shocked that this movie made so much money.
Yeah.
Because I remember it being kind of like a cult flick, maybe? Is that the right term? I don't know. Yeah. I guess I just had no idea it was so popular. But anyways, if you haven't seen this movie, there will be spoilers ahead. So please do yourself a favor and hit pause now, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie, and this week I have found only one: after a night they can't remember, comes a day they'll never forget.
That's a decent. Doesn't give too much away.
The tagline is almost better than the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like it sets you up for a much more straightforward movie than what you actually get. Maybe straightforward is the word to go with.
Mm-hmm.
But it may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
All right. After a night of partying, two stoners named Jesse and Chester wake up one morning with a fridge stuffed full of pudding, a roommate they don't know, and no recollection of what they did the night before. To make matters worse, their twin girlfriends are pissed at them, believing they forgot their anniversary. To get back in their good graces, Jesse remembers that they bought the twins' anniversary presents, and they're in his car. However, once they leave the house, Jesse discovers that his car is nowhere to be found. In order to get their special treat, the boys need the anniversary gifts, and so they set out on a quest to find Jesse's car. On the way, they encounter a transgender stripper looking for a briefcase full of money, a group of UFO cultists led by Zoltan, a French ostrich farmer named Pierre, and two sets of aliens searching for a device called the Continuum Transfunctioner. A mysterious and powerful device that's mystery is only exceeded by its power. Will the boys find the car, get the anniversary gifts, and receive their special treats? Will they manage to figure out what the Continuum Transfunctioner is and which group of aliens are the right ones to give it to? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
So now, this is a movie that, I mean, it goes against the title of our very own podcast, because I never really liked this movie very much. I watched it once, and that was it, until happenstance would have it that you and I decided to watch it on the same weekend for some reason, and we were thinking about shows to do, and you said, well, shit, we just both watch that movie. Why don't we do that one? And I'm like, okay, there we go. Done. But I know that when I watched it recently, it was because I wanted to see if it was better. Like, I knew it wouldn't age well, but I wanted to know if it was, like, funnier to me now than it was when people were quoting it. Because I remember the sweet dude scene. That was something that people would quote.
Yeah.
And it was annoying as shit. But what about you, Colin? I mean, what is your history with Dude, Where's My Car?
I like this movie. Like, I liked it when it came out. I remember at the time, it's kind of 1999 to like 2001 to me is like raunchy teen movie, stoner movie central. Mm-hmm. And so I remember this movie mixed in with the likes of American Pie, Euro Trip, The New Guy, Freddy Got Fingered, like all these, Ready to Rumble, which we watched, like all yeah. those movies in this similar vein. And yeah, I was probably one of those idiots going, dude, sweet, and like doing all quoting this movie,
yeah,
and all that stuff. And yeah, I just remember liking it at the time that it came out, because I would have been like 13 14 when I saw it.
Yeah, and I was 22.
So it was like right in the niche for this type of movie at the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, with this movie, I liked it up to a point. Mm-hmm. And then, like, that whole, for me, it falls apart with the continuing transfunctioner was what my problem always used to be with this movie, where it's just like, that was unnecessary. Because you see that, like, a couple of years later, they come out with The Hangover, and it's like, oh, see, that's what Dude, Where's My Car was trying to do, but that was what it missed being, right? And so I went into this movie because of a tagline, like, after a night they can't remember comes a day they'll never forget. I was expecting something that I ended up finding later on in The Hangover, you know? Gotcha. So, yeah.
Yeah, for me, this movie, I guess I'm just so far removed, and I'll just say, like, it's nowhere near, this type of comedy does absolutely nothing for me at my current age. But I remember really liking this type of comedy back, you know, when I was a teenager full of raging hormones and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But this movie, I feel like, is kind of one of those time capsule movies for my youth, because, like, is there such thing as a stoner comedy anymore? Like, I just don't feel like being a stoner is, like, a thing anymore.
Well, it's been a few years. I mean, like, Pineapple Express is what, like, 2014-ish?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
You know? Yeah, somewhere around there. I mean, there was Jay and Silent Bob Reboot.
Yeah.
But have they gotten a bit too straight in those ones, you know? I mean, you know, that's the thing, though, that I find interesting about this movie is, like, you know, the little granny calls them fucking stoners. Everyone calls them stoners. They don't smoke any weed in this movie. The only, only the dog smokes weed. That's the only time you see drugs at all in this movie. Like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
You see more empty, like, beer bottles or whatever than you do of, but everyone calls them fucking stoners. And it's like, well, then why aren't they smoking weed? Like, half baked, they're smoking weed, or, you know, like, fuck, she's dressed up as a giant joint at the end of that one. But, you know, like, Friday, they're smoking weed, all these stoner comedies. But yeah, this one, it's like, okay, the dog gets stoned, but that's the joke is, where's, like, the weed in the stoner comedy?
Yeah, that's true. Now that you bring it up, they, like, to me, I'm like, oh, they're so clearly playing that stoner character, but you don't actually see them light up at any point.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's where I wonder, with something like Bill and Ted's, do you classify that as a stoner comedy just because of how the characters act?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because them, I feel like they're more like metalheads. Mm-hmm. Like, clearly they probably smoke weed, but it's like, I guess it's like, I just remember back then, like, being a stoner was like an identity.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just don't feel like, I was watching the movie and I was just like, I don't feel like being a stoner is an identity anymore. Yeah. Or maybe it's just, there's just so many things now that it's just kind of like, We don't have to care if you smoke pot or not. Like, everybody, it's illegal now. Everybody does.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but that was one of my takeaways, though, on this one. I did read, though, that this idea or this movie was originally pitched as a live-action Beavis and Butthead movie.
That tracks.
Right? Yeah. Well, let's jump into Dude, Where's My Car? It's directed by Danny Lehner, who is the director of Harold and Kumar, so there's another stoner comedy of my past. Many single episodes of TV credits. That's the kind of guy we're dealing with here. Harold and Kumar is his other big movie. Produced by Broderick Johnson, Andrew Kossov, Gil Netter, and Wayne Rice. And it's written by Philip Stark, who has 4 total writing credits. 6 episodes of South Park being one of them, and 26 episodes of That 70s Show being another one. I wonder if that's Ash.
Okay, I wonder. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we open this movie on the text of the following story is based on actual events. That's a joke, right?
Yeah, like,
obviously, I know the continuum transfunction or the alien shit. Like, okay, like, is there a story?
It's just so unnecessary that I don't even know if it's fun, like, if it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's clearly not based on a true story.
Unless the true story is someone getting blackout drunk and not remembering where their car is.
I guess, yeah.
Like, okay, that's a true story, you know, like, but everything else is made up. Because it's only based on
the global truth, not, like, factual truth.
That's right. But then we open the movie with, like, the trippy, funky space opening credits. With, like, ladies dancing and then ostriches for some reason. And, like, you're wondering the whole time, like, what the fuck is going on? And then you forget that all this comes into play later.
Yeah, looking back at it, I mean, is that kind of, like, is the thing that the opening credits is serving to kind of, like, lay the pieces and then the movie just, I guess, connects the dots, right?
Yeah, like, is he dreaming right now, and these are the flashes of the thing he can remember?
That's kind of what I'm thinking now. When I watch it, I'm just like, oh, that's just kind of like in movies, you know, like back in the day, they always had like these tight, weird opening title credits.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of thinking that you mentioned it, that maybe that is kind of what's happening, because the movie opens with him sitting up.
Yeah. But the credits end with this weird Catwoman digital, like a computer animated Catwoman thing, pink. Well, I don't understand what the fuck that one was all about, though.
Oh, yeah.
If the rest of it is like bits and pieces from his night before.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's some more like subtle thing that I just overlooked. I don't even remember that, to be honest.
Well, or maybe my edibles had kicked in at that point. I don't know. So we open this movie with Jesse waking up, and we get like titles across the screen of, you know, who they are. Like, we're right into this. Like, that's the one thing I realized is just how high blistering pace this opening bit is, of just the amount of information you are piled on with all at once.
Yeah.
Is the answering machine, you clearly see who they are, you introduce them, they've got this weird roommate for some reason. Is he, like you said in your 60-second synopsis, that they wake up with a roommate they don't know about. Like, is he from the night before? How do they know his name? Or is he...
He never really gets explained.
Yeah. Like, comes out, me, pisses in the plant, and goes back to his closet.
They also don't really, like... It seems like they had some kind of traveling party, right? But
yeah,
they don't really explain what happened with that.
And that's what was missing, you know, like especially when I watched it back in the day, that's what I felt was missing, is you never get to see the stories pieced together. Like, at least with something like The Hangover, they eventually managed to kind of piece together a story of what happened the night before. Eurotrip have a scene like that too? They get all stoned. They get stoned on the hash brownies in Amsterdam. And...
Yeah. I think, yeah, I agree. Like, I think that if you're going to put stuff in play, then by the end of the movie, you have to have explained how everything fits together. Like, you can't leave any loose ends. It's like a detective, like a weird stoner detective mystery, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and they didn't quite make all the connections. After we meet Jesse, we meet Andrew the monkey on TV. Like, they just label this monkey on Discovery Channel just because it's funny, I guess.
For no reason. Yeah, I guess it's funny.
Yeah, and then Chester, played by Sean William Scott, on the couch scratching himself, just like the monkey. But yeah, we get all this information in the opening, though, that Chester loves Animal Planet, and these guys are big dummies, and then we get the answering machine message from the twins that they trashed the twins' house the night before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What, like, I find, like, between Sean William Scott and Ashton Kutcher, like, I don't know what you think. I find that I buy Sean William Scott in this movie. Ashton Kutcher, he's just, maybe it's because I know him more now, like, I still have seen, like, more current things, and he's kind of had, I guess, more of a career, but I felt like he seems, like, I just don't buy him as this character as much as I did Sean William Scott.
Yeah, but this was launching right off of his 70s show fame, and, you know, Kelso was a dummy.
Yeah. I guess to me, I was just kind of like, there's a starker contrast between Stifler and Chester, whereas I feel like Jesse is just Kelso.
Yeah, that's again. True. Whatever. Yeah, no, I think you're right. Sean William Scott is probably the more believable of the two. Ashton Kutcher's just too pretty.
Yeah, that's gonna say too. He's just too, yeah.
Yeah.
He's too much of a model to be, like, when Jerry O'Connell shows up and they're like, he's in his, I'm like, Ashton Kutcher looks more like he could be with those boys than hanging around with Sean William Scott.
Not Jerry O'Connell. That's his brother.
Oh yeah, it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
That's his name. Charlie.
Charlie O'Connell, I think. Yeah, he's the Charlie Murphy to you know, Eddie Murphy. He's the
Billy Baldwin to the Alec.
Yeah. Who's the guy on Entourage? The Matt Dillon's brother. Is that another Charlie Dillon? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
We find out, though, the one joke that does pay off at the end is we get to find out why their fridge is full of pudding. But yeah, they seem to have a lifetime supply of pudding, and they're playing thumb wars while wearing their army helmets. But they realize that, okay, they're going to get some special treats from the twins if they can find their present, which is in the car, and they need to go find their car. But first, their boss is going to show up. See, and that's another one that never really pays off, is do we find out why the pizzas skipped out on the delivery? Or was their plan all along to just scam him for a bunch of pizzas?
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess because the pizza is sitting there, you assume that they just took them for themselves.
Yeah.
But you kind of were left wanting there to be a more, I don't know, like a little bit more of something to that, I guess. Something less simple.
Yeah, I do like the shtick with the pizza, though, the throwing it to the ceiling and, you know, the, look, an elephant, throwing the extra, you know, catching the slices. Yeah.
I mean, you talked in our Ninja Turtles episode, hopefully this one comes out after this, but you talked about the rooster crowing and the random sound effects. How did you feel about the random just cat? Like, we never see a cat in this house.
Yeah, that's another one of those ones that you don't necessarily need. Yeah, you can get rid of the feedback on a microphone. You can get rid of the rear. Yeah, the perfectly timed cat. Yeah. But yeah, they go outside to find their car, and they find that their car is missing. And we get a drop of the title of the movie. Dude, where's your car? Where's my car, dude?
Where's your car, dude?
And Colin, I think we're going to do a little I Used to Like This One Piece Theater.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah, so much happens in this opening scene that this just sets up everything that's going to happen, everything you need to know So I don't know. I just thought this would be a fun, stupid scene to do. It was either this or the dude, sweet scene. But with that one, there is a third person in that scene because the tailor comes over. So, yeah. So let's do a little, dude, where's my car? Do you want to be Jesse or Chester?
I'll be,
Chester gets the big speech at the end. That's your heads up on that one.
I'll be Jesse.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
Dude, where's my car?
Where's your car, dude?
Dude, where's my car?
Where's your car, dude?
Dude, where's my car?
Where's your car, dude?
Did I drive last night?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
I'm not sure. Dude, where's your car?
Dude, it's not funny, dude. The car is gone.
Yeah.
Dude, where's my car?
Shut up, dude.
Look. Okay, look. You're right. I know what we need to do. We need to get back into the state of mind that we were in last night.
That way we could retrace our steps.
Yeah.
Sense memory, simulated perception, altered consciousness, memory retrieval. Discovery Channel.
Nice. Nelson's?
Shibby.
Yeah.
Yes! I used to like this One Piece theater. Were they hoping that Shibby would become a thing? Or, like, was it already a thing in 2000? And because I was 22, I wasn't young and hip enough to know the street lingo of Shibby?
I don't think it was a thing.
No?
Okay. I think it was one of those things that, yeah, they probably hoped maybe it would catch on.
That would be the next MILF.
Yeah. But I don't think it ever did.
No, probably not. No. It's kind of like Wheezing the Juice.
Yeah. No, Wheezing the Juice. Funny story about that. I thought until I married my wife, basically, that it was Squeezing the Juice.
Yeah, so did I.
And then she corrected me, and I was in complete disbelief.
Yeah.
It's like a Mandela effect.
Because the weasel wheezes the juice.
That's not great on audio.
That's the sounds he makes, though. So they set out on their quest. They have no car. They have to walk to where the girls are. First, they get hit by cars. Sorry, they have to go see Nelson first for, like, I don't know, meditation guidance? Is that what he was doing?
Yeah, I don't know, it reminded me of, like, I think he was trying to, like, lead them on some sort of guided drug meditation. Was that, was that how they were going to get into the state of mind?
Yeah, because, I mean, like I had, you know, I just said the line, sense memory, simulated perception, altered consciousness, memory retrieval. So is that what this is then? I guess so, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's like the scientific term, but I think it's all just to say they were high as fuck the night before and now they're going to do so again.
Yeah. See, and is that, like, were they on some sort of drug, or were they really drunk? Like I said, they get called two stoners by the fucking stoners by the little old lady that hits Jesse with her car, and Charlie O'Connell is talking about how they're stoners and everything. They're going to go stoner hunting or stoner bashing or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
What were they on the night before that made them forget everything? I always thought it was blackout drunk. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, because you never see them actually smoke. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, you can't smoke enough weed to forget a night.
Well, that's not what, you know, the man would have you believe.
That's right. Yeah. No,
drugs are bad.
I mean, I'll forget what happened to me last night, but, you know, just because, like, I can't remember that anyway.
Yeah.
If I really thought about it, I would be able to remember. But no, I just, yeah, the trashing of that house also makes me think drinking party. Because you got the guy on this on the roof, toilet paper everywhere.
Well, yeah, like you have a mass. Like, yeah, alcohol in some way or another was involved because that's the type of party it seems to have been. Like, I don't think I've never seen like a. Not that I really have gone to that many parties, but I just don't imagine, like, at a party where everyone's just smoking weed, I don't think things are getting, like, wild and off the wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like people would be pretty, like, relaxed.
Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing about a party when I was in junior high or high school, something like that. Yeah, that's right.
That's the saddest statement.
yes it is. I'm just a crying clown, but it was one of those my parents are out of town parties, and you know, and a lot of stuff got absolutely and every, trashed.
Everyone was talking about it at school on Monday, and you were just like, oh yeah.
Oh,
sounds fun, guys.
but at least I know what happened to Urkel. He turned into Stefan Urkel again. Because I was home. God. It's Friday night, and the mood is right. I'm at home watching TGIF on ABC. Fuck.
Dang.
I gotta say, the drive-through Chinese restaurant scene, it was hilarious to me. That one I really did find funny. The and then scene, I enjoyed
that
it.
One holds up the best in terms of the comedy. It's just so funny.
Yeah, I swear, if you say and then one more time,
and then. And then.
And when they pull into the drive-thru, there's like this song playing where, like, I know it from another 2000s movie. I want to say Road Trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean, like, like we talked about in Ready to Rumble, I feel like all these movies, there's like a list of 20 songs that you can choose from in any order for your movie, and all these movies picked those.
Yeah, but this isn't one of the ones that have my own worst enemy in it, though, so...
Yeah, shockingly. They were going for a little bit more of a, like, poppy vibe in this one than a punk vibe.
Yeah. So we then meet Christy Boner, and she knows them, and they're shocked that Christy Boner knows them. Now, this is a moment where... She comes up, she starts making out with Jesse, which makes me think that they did more the night before, right? Because she's also, do you remember me now, and puts his hand on her boob. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there was something that happened when he was blackout, whatever he was the night before. Doesn't he have a girlfriend? Don't they, at the end of the movie, say, you are the best boyfriends ever? And all I can think about is, no, he did some form of cheating on you the night before. In your own house, as far as I know.
Yeah, and that never really comes back, does it? Like, that never really becomes a thing between him and Wanda, well, or whatever. Whichever one is his girl.
Yeah, I think more is it Jennifer Garner or the other one.
Yeah. All I could think about with that was, how is it that Christy Swanson ended up in that role?
Yeah.
Because how she would have been, this movie is 22 years old. She's 50. She would have been 30. So, I mean, she's like all I really know her from is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I feel like that was, what, 93, maybe 96?
Yeah, she was in some sort of Charlie Sheen action movie, too. I remember that was another one. Like almost maybe Navy SEALs or something like that.
Yeah, she just seems like a weird choice to me for that role. Yeah. There would have been, like, more current people, like, I don't know, Jessica Alba or, like, somebody like that of the time. Who's the girl who in American Pie, Elizabeth? She was also
Elizabeth Banks? Yeah. No, not Elizabeth. Elizabeth. Fuck.
Elizabeth.
Shannon Elizabeth. Shannon Elizabeth.
Shannon Elizabeth. There we go. Yeah.
We had her last name, not her first name.
There we go.
So, were the twins at this party? Because, they don't realize that the outside of the house is destroyed. That was a fun line where they're like, oh, it's spotless in here now. Yeah, I think it's Chester that says, oh, they obviously haven't been outside. And that's why they offer to take the garbage out.
Yeah.
Yeah, were they not home? Were they asleep while this party was happening?
I'm imagining that they were just asleep because they just seem like these weird, innocent...
They had their white noise machine turned up all the way. They had their sleep apnea masks and their noise-canceling headphones.
Yeah, they had their little eye masks and stuff. They're just completely zoned out. And maybe the party just, kind of ripped through like a tornado.
Oh, it's like the old Robert Munsch book with Jonathan cleaned up and then he heard a sound. And it's because his apartment is a subway station. Yeah.
I know that, I know objectively that Jennifer Garner and who's the other lady?
I don't Solica, remember.
Maria Solica or something like that. Yeah, I know they're not, softball. I know they're not actually twins.
Yeah.
But they look like they could be related in this movie.
Yeah. It does make me wonder, are they legitimately supposed to be twins in this movie? Even non-identical? Or do they just call them the twins because they're sisters or because they look so much alike or,
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of felt because they dress them the same that they're trying to kind of make it out as if they're identical twins, but...
Well, and of course they're doing the classic twin trope of making sure that they complete each other's sandwiches.
Wilma and Wanda.
Yeah, they must be twins. Legitimate twins. But any time you have twins in a movie or a TV show, at some point they have to say some lines at the same time.
Yeah.
Because they can't be independent characters.
No. It's weird to see Jennifer Garner as well in such a throwaway role.
Yeah, a little bit. And a goofy comedy too, at the same time.
Yeah.
When
did Daredevil come out? Was that I guess that was 2003 maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was after this, yeah.
It's a little bit further removed.
Would she have still been on Alias at this time?
I'm not sure. I never watched Alias.
Jersey Girl?
I love that scene when they're taking out the garbage.
Yeah.
And they drop the bottle cap. It's just such a man thing to be like, no.
No, I got it.
I got it.
Do it. Take off your shoes and pick it up. But, the bottle cap that they drop, it's a Mountain Dew bottle cap. And I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. So, always on the lookout for product placements in movies this week, Dude, Where's My Car? Is brought to you by Mountain Dew and Pepsi, Miller Lite Beer, Ford and Mercedes-Benz, Adidas and Kangol, Dynamo Hockey and Namco Games, NASA, Casio, Icy Brand Slushes, the board game Trivial Pursuit, Panasonic Easophone Answering Machines, Thrasher and Alien Workshop Skateboarding, and Rubik's Cube. Plus, the fictional Swirlo Pudding, Sierra Juice Company, Kitty Cat Club. However, to be fair, there's gotta be a strip club out there known as the Kitty Cat Club somewhere, right? There's no way.
Yeah.
St. Margaret's School for the Blind and Captain Stew's Space-O-Rama. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Even the physical comedy of them trying to grab this bottle cap and then just, the way that they just managed to trash the house, pun intended, that got me as well. That was another thing that I thought was funny.
Yeah. I mean, I also liked when there's the scene when they first show up to the twins' house. And you can see, the fence is all blown out and stuff. But they still take the time to enter through the gate.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I did jump right to the Twins without mentioning the Kitty Cat Club, because they do go there before going to see the Twins, and they meet their gender-challenged male, as they put it in this movie, our transgender stripper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at this point, you know, like, poor Chester, because obviously Jesse's getting all the play, but then we find out that, oh no, every other stripper was into Chester.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they have the line, is that when they have, like, the lineup wet t-shirt pour over scene?
Something like that, yeah. But, you know, I am amazed a little, like, I don't think this transgender joke, though, is as offensive as it could have been. Like, I feel like it was actually not handled terribly with the "you're a dude." I mean...
Well, I mean, the only thing is, well, I don't know, because, I mean, I would find it a little bit off-putting, but the whole thing about, like, how he, like, she makes out with him first, and then it's revealed, like, "you're a dude." And, I mean, I think the offense also comes into the, like... It's the butt of a joke, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know that this plays as well now, but I can guarantee that when I watched this movie the first time, and when my friends watched it when we were younger, I bet it was kind of like we would have been like, "Blah!"
Oh,
like,
you
would have
been like, oh no, yeah,
you know, like, oh my god, like, this is the most disgusting thing I could ever imagine,
yeah,
and like, and that kind of stuff. So I think there is something to that of like just the othering and the, I don't know what you would call it, like, villainization, I guess, of being trans.
I mean, for me, I think where I'm getting a little bit more tastefulness is because I compare it to something like Ace Ventura, where when the trans joke is revealed, all of a sudden everyone is spitting and throwing up and they want gum to chew and, you know, like, just absolutely revolted. Whereas at least he doesn't have that reaction of, like, he does, "oh, you're a dude," but he doesn't, like, start wiping his mouth or anything, you know, like, I guess that's why, in comparison,
yeah,
it's definitely not as bad as it could have been for 2000, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, that's kind of, there's a bunch of things in this movie that are kind of like, you know, you're taking, at the time, which would have been, like, the easy jokes of transgender, like, homosexual, that kind of stuff, and like all that is in this movie and was very much, you know, those were like common comedic themes time, and like having not seen stuff like that for a really long time, it's weird coming back to watch this movie and be like, oh yeah, like, this movie
that
just,
was a thing,
this movie just came out and made $73 million and nobody batted an eye, like, you know.
So now, after they've trashed the twins' house and, you know they have to make it up to them by actually finding their car to be able to find these presents, then the movie takes the twist that makes it start getting really weird, where they get pulled into the van and they meet all the people whose names start with Z, except for Jeff. Yeah. Right, so it's all the Zara, Zilly, and all, whatever, the Zach, whatever, and Jeff. And mm-hmm. Of course, Jeff is the most charismatic one.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
That character is the most fun out of all of them, I think.
Like, yeah.
Charismatic is the wrong word, but...
I felt, yeah, I mean, spoiler, he's not, but I felt like it would have been hilarious if Jeff ended up being Zoltan. Like, that would have been funnier to me.
He's the guy behind the curtain, do a whole Wizard of Oz thing.
Yeah.
Did they take them to this tailor on purpose, though? Because after they have their whole discussion about trust no one, well, except for us, you can trust us, but trust no one else, which I thought was a funny bit. But they get dropped off at this tailor where all of a sudden, oh, it's, you guys are back. You're here for your suits, your special suits. Were they taking them there, or is it just a freaking coincidence?
I think it's just happenstance.
Okay.
But I don't like stuff like that. Like, I don't like how it could be just so random, like, oh, you should show up and then this guy showed there. Like, it would have been nicer if there was some sort of more setup to it.
Yeah, because, like, there's an episode of The Office where they are trying to find Michael, because Jim abandoned him at a gas station because of an emergency.
Yeah.
And they take Holly with him, and Holly is the, you know, Michael whisperer because she thinks like him, but you can see the thought process because it's like, oh, giant egg roll. I wonder what that's like, you know? Something like this. Yeah. The randomness and the happenstance. I wanted the Stoner mystery movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they get their fucking Adidas tracksuits. They've got their new drip, as the kids say, right? Drip. I just made it uncool, so people will stop saying drip now.
I always thought drip had more to do. I mean, I don't know anything about the current youth slang, but I always thought drip had more to do with like your hair.
Oh, I don't fucking know. I don't know. In my recent recordings, I have used that shit slaps. Now I've used drip. I mean, come on. I'm young and hip over here.
When are you gonna
young fella?
When are you gonna say this movie hits different?
Oh, it hits hard. It hits hard, baby. So yeah, but they get there. We find out though that they've gotten tattoos. The who's on first joke here? I mean. I was still there for it. It still worked for me. The whole dude, sweet. And I love that moment where you can see that they're truly getting pissed off. And that's the best moment.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah. I like ultimately how it ends, but it's so stupid.
Yeah. Oh, and how it ends is perfect because it's like, no, you have a tattoo that says dude. You have a tattoo that says sweet. Oh, dude, sweet, right? But like, it's just that's something that they never resolved in something like Who's on First, little bit, yeah. And then we also find out that when they're going through their pockets, that they bought cell phones. Man, those were some 2000 cell phones right there.
I know those aren't even razors. Those are just like flip phones.
Yeah, but we find out that that's not all they bought, and we get this weird like Bust a Move montage music video. It comes out of nowhere compared to everything else. Now, was that just a fantasy, or when they went to pick up their car, did they end up partying a bit more? Is this part of the day they'll never forget?
I think so. I think, yeah, I don't think that was a fantasy. I think that actually happened.
Okay. But then we get the scene with Fabio.
Oh my gosh.
and the makeout scene to end all makeout scenes. You know, I like that they went for it, and then they like broke apart and they're like, yeah, what's up, Fabio? And the downside was the fact that Fabio and his girlfriend were like revolted at that point, but it's like, well, fuck, you were the one that played chicken, you lost, don't get grossed out, you know, don't be a sore loser.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is you kind of, like, when you watch it, you're like, oh, these guys have done this before. So, I don't know what that says about their relationship. Maybe it's just, like, a novelty, like a trick they pull out at parties.
Yeah. I now also have to ask, though, if they're driving around in this car because they bought this car the night before, were they driving while they were, like, blackout wasted?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Okay. I think so. That was one of the things about this movie that I thought was weird, is that if you put all the pieces together, they definitely are driving under the influence.
See, whereas if you made the movie today, you could be using Uber or something like that, where, you know, that's a way for them to be like, well, our Uber dropped us off here. Mm-hmm. So let's find out what this is all about. They meet the erotic pleasure girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
The hot chicks. Yeah.
Yeah. All I can think about is how much your head would hurt if you deep throated a popsicle like that. Like, just sucked it right off the stick. And I mean, come on.
Just the brain freeze would be unimaginable.
Unimaginable. Yeah. That, like, your head would split open literally at that point, I think. Oh, that would be the worst.
I find watching those girls really funny because if you, like, there's always the one girl who's, like, the lead. She's always at the front. But it's funny sometimes to watch the girls in the back because they're not as good at staying in character. And so sometimes they'll be like looking off in other directions, or you'll see them like crack a smile for some weird reason.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah. See, for directors out there, let that be a lesson to you. Make sure that.
Yeah. Continuity is important.
Yeah. But you also got to make sure that your background performers are just as good as your, you know, cast performers. Yeah.
Your foreground.
Your talkies.
Yeah.
But yes, the transsexual stripper finds them again, and then they end up getting arrested, though, because the cop with the really thick glasses has made a mistake. I like the bit with the mannequin, though, where the one cop starts beating up the mannequin. Leave him alone! He doesn't know anything! Like, yeah.
That just plays, like, there are parts of this movie that I swear, like...
That plays like a Naked Gun movie or something.
Well, also just reminds me of, like, an SNL or, like it's sketch. Like, yeah. That scene especially seems very sketch comedy.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked it up, but I was wondering if maybe one of the writers was kind of a sketch writer, because that one for sure just seems... It reminds me of, like, what's that British, not Monty, maybe Monty Python, but some British sketch show I remember. There's a similar, like, prison sketch that they do, and that's like an interrogation, and they gave this gave me vibes of that.
Yeah. Well, there was only the one writer on this movie, and he was the guy that only had 4 credits.
Okay.
So with 70s Show and South Park being one of them, like with South Park, maybe like he's used to writing like shorter format and like things that are silly. I don't know,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's, yeah. It kind of has South Park vibes for sure.
Yeah. He's not an SNL or a Mad TV or Chappelle Show writer. I mean, he's, you know, so he doesn't have that, but you're right. It's almost like they had all these different ideas, threw them in a blender and thought, this is how we're going to tie them all together, is by having this story of guys looking for their cars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, have you seen that Eric Andre movie from a year or two ago? I don't remember what it's called, so that I'm going to be no help at all with that. But it's him doing a bunch of pranks, but they have tied it together as a story.
Oh, no.
With... Like, so they've got scripted stuff in between. So instead of just being Jackass where it's stunts, you know, they've actually made a story out of it as well. Bad Trip.
Oh, no, I haven't seen it. I've heard of it, though.
But yeah, that's what he does. Yeah, he does these stupid prank type stunts and everything like that, and then has somehow made a story out of it. And so that's almost what this is, except that, you know, you don't even get the shock value of the pranks. It's just weak sketches all tied together. One of the best line readings in this movie is from the one kid at the school for the blind, where he's introducing himself to the ladies by, you know, this is how we say hi when we're blind. And the twins come over, and he has the best line reading when he says, "Bye, ladies. I need to be alone now."
Yeah, I like that one. I like, there's something about those girls, every time they come in, they're like, "We are hot chicks."
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
That's exactly what an alien would say to a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, yeah, they end up going to Charlie O'Connell for some help, too. Or Tommy, I guess, is what his character's name. I don't have to keep calling him Charlie O'Connell. But yeah, they go to him for help, and Tommy kidnaps Nelson, and so we get those double-crossing sexy, sexy sluts. So we're constantly reminded about how hot these women are anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then, to make things even more confusing, we have these, like, Swedish-sounding guys show up looking for the continuing transfunctioner. Yeah.
Does it come into play at the... I don't remember... I had trouble keeping track of what this story is between these two alien groups.
Yeah. Well, so the Swedish guys are the keepers. Like,
they're the keepers of the continuum?
Yeah, it's revealed that they're the actual keepers of the continuing transfunctioner, whereas the hot chicks are just trying to find it.
Okay.
Whereas the people in beige and bubble wrap, they're the ones that just want to pray to it because they think that, oh, because someone has said that they will take them to their planet. Yeah, see, I don't fully understand. The bubble wrap people are told they will get to go to the planet, but I forget which set of aliens told them that.
Who they're aligned with?
Yeah, because Zoltan's not an alien, right?
No.
Yeah, okay.
Zoltan is the rich kid who lives in his mother's barn.
That's right, yeah. the barn. That's not a barn. Barns are red.
I did when they said that line, I was going to say, like, for anybody out there who's wondering if the definition of a barn is that it has to be red, just so you know, that's not the case.
Okay. The more you know.
At least in my experience, I mean, I've seen non-red barns.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen sheet metal barns. I mean, yeah. So the almost blind cop, that was some funny stuff, too. He accidentally sent their car to the impound where it was tagged for auction, and it was sold earlier that morning. And so they get the address for it. Sorry, before they can get to the impound, they get tasered. And that's where we get the whole bit about the barn, and we get to meet the Bubble Bunch. I like that the girls, though, are bound and gagged with bubble wrap. I thought that was a fun little touch. I feel like they could have had even more fun with the bubble wrap. You know, they pop a couple, but they don't pop a whole lot.
Yeah, like, I felt that, like, they should have at one point had a room full of bubble wrap that they, like, got thrown into and were trying to talk or something, and every time they moved, it was just, like, tons of bubble pops.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Or it just distracts them from their mission for a second.
Or thrown them in, like, a bubble wrapped cell of some sort.
Yeah. But they manage to escape, and they go to the address of where their car is going to be. And this is where it's like a scene out of Jurassic Park, except instead of raptors, we get the llamas, which are not llamas, they're ostriches. And we've got Andy Dick and Brent Spiner show up. But Brent Spiner is uncredited in this movie. And he has since come out and admitted that it was arrogant of himself to do so. But, like, he insisted on being uncredited in this movie.
Really?
I guess he wasn't proud of it.
He was too much of an artiste.
Yeah.
To be in this very profitable movie.
Yeah, because, you know, like, high art is Data from Star Trek. Or the weird scientist from Independence Day.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So Brent Spiner is Pierre, like the ostrich farmer?
Yeah.
I did not pick that up. I didn't recognize him.
Well, that's the thing is, like, Brent Spiner is really talented. Like, he is a guy that I've seen him in a few different things. One that I always remember is that he was a recurring character on Night Court.
Okay.
Back in the day. And he played this, like, I don't know, he was almost like Cletus from The Simpsons type, you know, like, you know, yokel. And it just, he was great in it. And so it's, he's one of those guys that I find that a bit of a chameleon, bit of a silent assassin, that Brent Spiner.
Hmm.
He should have been used more. But yeah, because Chester watches so much Animal Planet, he manages to secure their release, but they do have a locker key to Space-O-Rama. So here's where, like, we actually get a little bit of mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because now they have to figure out, like, or no, because the locker key leads to Space-O-Rama, which, like, leads to you figuring out the pudding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you still never really find out, like, do you find out how they got the money? Stole the briefcase from the stripper?
Yeah. Or, well, they put it somewhere safe for her, because it doesn't even seem like they did steal it, because it's safe in this locker. So it's never explained why. See, that's what's missing from this movie is the whys. Even if they didn't like the Hangover where you get the montage of photos during the credits to fill in a few of the gaps that are missing, but you don't get that either.
Yeah, part of the problem, I think, is once the Continuum Transfunctioner gets involved, it's like they forget everything else that they should explain, and the plot now is just furthering, like, how do we get to the Continuum Transfunctioner and everybody who's also trying to get the Continuum Transfunctioner.
Yeah.
But then you don't even actually, like, spoiler alert, it ends up that they've had the Continuum Transfunctioner the whole time, but you don't even really know how they got it. Mm-hmm. Do you? Like, you don't, like, how did they get it from the Keepers? I don't think that's ever explained.
No, I don't think it is. So that's the thing, is all this wackiness happens in the movie, and yeah, you never really get the explanation of why or mm-hmm. how. Yeah.
And it's like things constantly, like the ostrich is a good example, like things constantly end up being red herrings. It's like they go to some place because they think the car is going to be there, and then when they can get it, the car all of a sudden it's gone. Or when they're at the police station, they think they're going to get it, but then all of a sudden it's at the impound. Oh, actually, it's not just at the impound, it got auctioned. And then it's just like, that's so much of how the story ends up progressing.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets jarring at a certain point, I think, where you're just kind of like, no, something needs to be, like, I need something to be a set through line here.
Yeah. Yeah, instead of moving the car around, you know, with them constantly on its heels, you know, you just need them to figure out the steps to get to the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always just out of reach. It's that dream where you just can't catch with the thing you're chasing.
It almost would have been better if the car had actually only ever been in one place. And almost would have been funnier if that place just ended up being, like, in their back driveway at the back of the property that they just forgot about. And just everything else just led to there.
Yeah.
And then it's like, find the car and then figure out what to do about the Continuum Transfunctioner.
Yeah. When they get to their locker, though, they also have, like, a whole shit ton of tickets. Like, I don't even know how they even physically had the time to do all this stuff in the night. Because that's a lot of tickets that they won. And they managed to trash the twins' house. Like you said, it must have been a whirlwind that just went through there. But they get the idea of just using the tickets to, like, buy something that looks like a continuing transfer functioner. Because no one knows what it looks like. How do the actual keepers of the Continuum Transfunctioner not know what it looks like? Didn't they see Chester playing with the Rubik's Cube when they first encounter him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, is it one of those things, like, as a protective mechanism, when it's not near them, it like, has some, like, self-defense, or it turns into a common household object or toys,
some sort of AI camouflage or something?
Yeah
maybe, I don't know. They had it all along, and then the Rubik's Cube turns into the Continuum Transfunctioner with the cheesy special effects, but then all the hot chicks grow into a giant hot chick, and we get the great line of, I want to go on that ride, daddy. Me too, son. Me too.
And we just got the gratuitous underskirt panty shot.
Yep. Of course.
Of course. <Yeah. laughs>
But then we've got the proton accelerator annihilation beam that is going to destroy the day, but the silly straw saves the day, along with Animal Planet once again, because Chester realizes that he can use the straw as a tool.
That's called a payoff, ladies and gentlemen.
Right? But after they ask if those guys have ever been to Uranus, everyone's memory gets erased, and then we're, like, back at the beginning of the movie again. So, did they get erased, or did they get sent back in time? Because it really is, like, exactly the beginning of the movie again.
Yeah, I felt like they got sent back in time. That's what it seemed like to me. Because wouldn't the twins have mentioned something? And it starts the exact, like, everything starts over, it seems like.
Yeah, because we've got the roommate peeing in the bush again, and...
Yeah.
But, like, their car has been returned this time, that's the only difference, but it's, yeah, I just, that's what I was wondering, is it's like, is it a reset, or is it a memory erase situation? What does the continuum transfunctioner do? Is that what the continuum transfunctioner does?
Well, I mean, it's a mysterious and powerful device that's mystery is only exceeded by its powers, so who knows what it can do? Yeah. It's a mystery.
But of course, you know, they get necklaces that make their boobs bigger, so... Yeah.
Again, this movie was made for a 14-year-old boy. In the early 2000s.
Yeah, see, because if it didn't, like, reset and send them back to the previous day, then it's no longer their anniversary, so I don't think it would work for getting the twins back. But the twins don't seem all that smart. Like, they're just token girlfriends. They're the princesses from Bill and Ted's all over again.
It also seems like they, like, whatever happened undid all the partying because their house is no longer in shambles.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It seems like maybe they kind of got a redo. But if so, then what party were Jesse and Chester waking up from now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
This movie boggles my mind. I'm more confused now that I've sat here and discussed it over the last hour. You know, it's...
Yeah.
I don't know. But we do get a repeat of the Chinese food gag to end this movie. Oh, and that was also a funny moment for me is when the bit where they send the Swedish guys, like the keepers, when they send them to the Chinese food restaurant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
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 I don't know what else to say about this movie, to be honest. It's just kind of like...
Yeah, also the repeat of the tattoo joke with them repeating the joke with the girls this time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the end, except for some bloopers during the credits. And there is a tag at the end of the credits.
Oh, I missed it. I didn't watch it. I need to start watching these movies to the end of the credits, it seems.
At the very end of the credits, after all the credits have rolled, you have... And then...
Well, of course.
There was a sequel plan for this movie at one point, too, called Seriously, Dude, Where's My Car? With the fact that you're blown away by the $70 million that this movie made, I'm surprised that Seriously, Dude, Where's My Car was not made.
Well, I mean, somebody over there had to realize, like... Well, I'm not going to say it's a fluke, but it's just like, if they were going to make a sequel on this, you had to strike while the iron was hot. Like, that sequel needed to come out the next year. Otherwise, like, I just don't I think it would have been done already.
You had to shibby while the shibby was still shibby.
Yeah. Well, the shibbying was good.
Well, that is Dude, Where's My Car? Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 5.4 out of 10, has a Metascore of 30. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 17% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 47%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a little old lady running over a fucking stoner with her car. Hit us with some reviews.
The reviews for this one are actually pretty funny, I'm not going to lie. All right, Ella Spence says, "It was a heartbreaking movie, left me in tears. The cast did an amazing job telling us the point of the movie and how he really wanted his car back. And in the end, he was dreaming it was a very sad movie. I cried for hours on end, thinking about where could his car be. It's one of the world's saddest mysteries, along with the famous one called, Hey, Where is My Lipstick? Both of those mysteries are heartbreaking. Where is her lipstick? Where is his car? Will we ever know? And that, folks, is what brought me down to tears. But back to the point. This movie was wonderful, and I rate it 4 stars because his car kind of sucks, not gonna lie. By the way, this movie helped me locate my car. It was stolen by a group of pandas from North Mexico. They dropped it off in North Korea and gave it to the army. Got it back after giving them pasta. Nice lads, but yeah, helpful movie to locate my car."
Yep, that guy's your demographic for this movie. He's seen pandas. He's tripping some sort of acid balls there.
Bo Huggabee says 5 out of 5 stars. Truly a B-rated silly fest of the great and illustrious cult genre. It's shallow but memorable, silly and stupid but brilliant to its own right. When you get the film, or it's something you saw at the right moment and at the right age, it's the most memorable B-rated style film. I suppose we all have that moment. The thing is, we rented this when I had no other films to rent back then, on VHS when grocery stores still rented movies. I was reluctant, thought it looked stupid. To this day, it's a don't judge a movie by its cover vibe. Someone recommended it for me at the local video store.
Oh, that wasn't me. You know, what's funny is when you said this is one of those great cult movies, like, my mind first went to, like, the bubble gang that's in this movie, the bubble wrap gang.
Yeah.
Like, thinking literally cult.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a stoner comedy, all those great cult movies out there, you know.
Yeah.
That's just an endless well of comedy, talking about cults.
I mean, this movie, they could have taken a dark turn with the cult of this movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they could have. Like, some sort of reason why they're in bubble wrap, because, you know, to show that they have faith, they have to jump off a building or something.
Yeah. Do I Know You says 5 out of 5 stars. This movie was really good. It made me cry so much. I didn't expect getting so emotional during the movie. Dude just needed to know where his car was. I relate so much. My car ended up getting stolen, and I had to cross overseas, the desert, the rainforest, and I ended up having to get through a war. But the movie was very heartwarming. I recommend watching.
Okay.
And then the last one is from Kaylee M, 5 out of 5 stars. I love the way this review starts. Speaking from secondhand experience, this movie is wonderful background entertainment for having your first kiss on a giant pink beanbag with the guy you've successfully stalked for 2.5 years. Tasteful, yet chaotic. Again, not a personal experience, but looking forward to trying it for myself.
I was really beginning to wonder where that one was going.
There you go.
Secondhand experience. I'm just like, you know, your friend told you it was okay or shitty or whatever. Like, I don't know. I just, secondhand experience. So she was Netflix and chilling.
I mean, I just got an idea for what I feel like might be a great short form podcast. Call it secondhand reviews.
Secondhand reviews.
I'm just relay what I was told about a movie.
So this guy told me that this was a piece of shit. So yeah, like I said, 5.4 and 47 from audiences, 17 and 30 from critics. I'm impressed that the Metascore went as high as 30. So, where does, Dude, Where's My Car fall for you, Colin?
Well, you know what? I'm glad that I watched it again.
Uh-huh.
But, I think this one's going in the vault.
Yeah?
Maybe we'll just watch it again in, like, another 30 years. It's just, like I said at the top, like, it's just not my comedy anymore. This is not the type of comedy that I like. And, you know, I mean, it's just a fluff movie. There's nothing. I struggle to say it's bad.
Yeah.
But I can unequivocally say it's not good.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I'd leave it.
Yeah, like, I did mention several moments in this movie that I still found funny. Or that maybe this time I found funny for the first time, because I really didn't like it the first time I watched it. But I realized that a lot of what I found funny is the same joke, essentially.
Yeah.
And then the tattoos and the where's my car, like, that's all just the same joke over and over again, just repeating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Even the bubble wrap guys a little bit, you know, but I found bits funny, but it still kind of overall hit me the same way it did the very first time I ever saw this movie, and where it's just like, it goes off the rails at one point. And yeah. Instead of going off the rails, it would have been better to tie things together better.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you hit it spot on where you said, like, if you want to watch the good version of this movie, then watch The Hangover.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, this movie throws too much out and doesn't tie anything up nicely. Like, you just kind of, you leave the movie and everything is erased, so it doesn't even matter, which is kind of a cop-out. But it's like, as a viewer, you leave it and you're like, well, what about that? And what about this? And what about, like, all that? So, yeah. That's a problem for me.
Well, there we go. That's Dude, Where's My Car? And that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you like that show, well, why not become an executive producer of the show? Go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon community, become a patron of this show, and then you get a shout-out just like executive producer Joshua Blum. Or if you don't want to support us monetarily, but you would like to still help us out, go over to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on. Give us 5 stars. It doesn't matter what you say. Just give us a review and help drive us up the charts. Help us get noticed. Or even smaller, just tell somebody, hey, there's this show. You might like it. Go check these guys out. Word of mouth spreads so much for us. I always do that. Fuck. Word of mouth does so much to spread show's audience. I don't. Fuck.
Word of mouth spreads like coronavirus.
Oh, God. See, that's the wormhole that we ended up in another episode. Word of mouth does so much to help spread word of mouth. What the fuck? See, like, that's the problem.
Word of mouth helps so much to spread. Yeah, I don't know. What does word of mouth spread? We've thought about it too much now. It's like, what is a chair? What is life?
At this point, the words just stopped having meaning. So, but help us get some more earballs on the show.
There we go. And check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, and check out our social media pages, check out our sweet bios, check out the links to all of the podcast episodes we've ever done. We've got to be close to 80 now.
Oh, we're well over 80.
Well over 80, Sean says.
We're almost at 90. This might be 90 even.
So plenty of options. There's no way we haven't covered a movie that you liked in the past. So find that movie, go listen to our podcast, and then tell your friends. And if there's a movie that you used to like and you want us to watch it, or maybe you want to watch it with us, let us know. Drop us an email at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com.
The thing that's funny about that is we're sending people over to listen to a show that we are telling them on this show that they're already listening to go listen to the show.
We need these Swedish aliens to come and remove the memory of post every episode you listen to. Your memory should be wiped so then you can start fresh every single time.
There you go. Oh, God. Yeah. Use that continuum transfuncture. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.